Well, the listening post tonight isn't at home. It's sitting under an enormous aircraft with two people who are going to tell me why the hell anybody would want to be sitting here under an enormous aircraft, with another one pointing its nasty bits at us and so on. So, Ian Craig, you're the man in charge of RAFA, is that right? Correct me on the right terminology.
Yeah, no, you may have done me a disservice there. It's probably career-limiting saying I'm in charge of RAFA, Tony. I'm head of Clear Skies. So RAFA is, in simplest terms, is made up of two pillars, which is our aged care services and Clear Skies, which is our charitable purpose.
For whom?
For veterans and generally the RAFA community. So we've got services for veterans. We work with community groups, and our branches are still very active. So, yeah. So, and I need to say, Tony, you're saying you're sitting under aircraft. You're actually sitting under a Dakota and a Lancaster. So please, there are a lot of your listeners who would be very pleased to know you're sitting under a Lancaster.
Indeed. The whole point of talking to these two people is the association, in a very wide and general but important sense, about this anniversary this year of the Royal Australian Air Force. But it's bigger than that. And in the same way as the RAFA place is bigger than just the RAAF, would that be true to say?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We whilst we were born out of the Air Force, our services are certainly not exclusive to Air Force and cover all of ADF, both serving members and veterans and their families.
Kylie, that really is a good segue into why you're sitting here. Your involvement here was much in the sense of somebody waving a flag to get something to happen. Can you perhaps give us a background to why I'm talking to you?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for having a chat with us today. Essentially, this really started about 4 years ago. I received this very random phone call from a gentleman called Nathan in South Australia. And he was the CEO of RSL Care, which is the residential arm of RSL in South Australia. And he spoke to me about a program he was wanting to establish in providing housing accommodation for veterans in need in South Australia. And he wanted to know if he could name the program after my late husband, Sergeant Andrew Russell. And I was a little taken aback. I happened to be in the car park at work, on my way into work that morning, thinking, who is this man? How did he get my phone number? And what is he talking about? So I gave him my email address and said, yeah, that's fine. Just send me a little bit of information and I'll have a look at it. And here we are now, all these years later, with a fabulous program established in South Australia, which I've had the opportunity to visit twice now. And I decided on my last visit that we needed to do something in WA. And I met with our former Minister for Veterans Issues in WA, Peter Tinley, and he told me I must speak to Ian. And so I did. And here we are today on this joint project, looking to establish the Andrew Russell Veteran Living Program here in Perth.
Okay, so we're going to save talking about that and its background till a little later in the interview. I'll come back to Ian. Ian, your association with the community and welfare in the community, how did that all begin? I mean, somebody, a little tiny boy, Ian's at school, what triggered you into this area?
Well, Tony, I guess a bit of a, you know, family background and values in the way that I was raised. But more importantly, our third son was born with a very complex congenital heart defect, which made me stop in my tracks. I was working in the commercial world where the focus was on making money. And when you go through an experience like that where you hand a baby over to a surgeon and you don't know that the baby is going to come out of that surgery, I guess your life changes to say, well, what legacy am I leaving to the world? And it just stopped me. I became president of Heart Kids, and from there was very lucky to score a position with Anglicare, which I was in for 15 years, and now I'm over 30 years within the charity world, and hugely blessed to have this position at RAFA.
But you went from Anglicare to elsewhere, and then here. Well, so what attracted you to RAFA?
Oh, well, look, I'm just, again, blessed because John Murray, our CEO, came to one of our fundraising events and actually took a table. And RAFA had gone down the path of... So, you know, we were established in 1929, and it was all about camaraderie and selflessness and reaching out. And then we got caught up in the seniors living world, retirement living, residential aged care, and probably in a sense the core purpose, the charitable purpose, got a bit lost in the complexity of running aged care services. And the board and John, to their huge credit, saw in the future that we needed to go back to our roots. And John approached me, so I'm forever in his debt, and I don't know how I'm going to repay it, and I'm sure he'll get it out of me at some stage, but I'm just so blessed to set up the Clear Skies portfolio, and this is obviously a big part of what we're doing.
And we need to talk in a little bit more detail about all that in just a moment or two. But Carly, how much in your mind, when you go on to your project like the one you're about to tell us about later, how much is it dependent on finding a kindred soul like Ian?
Oh, it's absolutely vital. And certainly I spent a number of months banging my head thinking, this isn't going to happen. No one is really interested in WA. I keep speaking to people and they say, oh, that's a wonderful idea. And there's the door. No one would really stick with it and help me and progress it, and I was really starting to feel quite disillusioned, and that was why I reached out to the minister, because I thought maybe there's someone out there that he could connect me with. And he mentioned Ian, and funny enough, as I walked out of the minister's office, who was there at the door to have the next meeting with the minister but Ian. And we then took the opportunity to meet, and we've been meeting fortnightly for probably almost 2 years now, and it's been absolutely amazing to work with someone who just gets it. I don't have to explain anything, he just gets it.
Somebody said to me once, God moves in mysterious ways. Absolutely. And he has in this case.
Absolutely.
Before we have a break, I just want to ask you about, now you have an army background yourself, and of course the tragedy of your widowhood. How did that initially come about, the army link?
So many, many years ago, when I was a young registered nurse working at Fremantle Hospital, I'd saved up a number of weeks of annual leave, and I was due to go on a 3-month holiday with my husband around Europe. Unfortunately, it got cancelled at the last minute because the Australian Army felt the need to go into East Timor, and my husband being in the SAS, his leave was cancelled, and I was left to spend 3 months home alone. And I thought, well, this is not fair. What am I meant to do? And he said, well, why don't you go to East Timor? I'm sure they're looking for volunteer nurses. And so the next thing, I found myself on a plane actually going to East Timor before him, which didn't go down well. While I was in East Timor volunteering as a nurse, I worked very closely with 3RIR. And I found the experience absolutely amazing. And a lot of the young soldiers said to me, you should join the Army Reserve when you get back to Perth. And so I did. I came back to Perth and I decided to join the Army Reserve as a nursing officer. And I went to Duntroon and spent my couple of weeks there and served in the Army Reserve. When Drew passed, though, I decided it was too difficult to put the uniform on, and at that stage I decided to leave the Army Reserve and instead work within the veteran space.
You've not moved very far away, and we're not going to move very far away. We're going to have some music right now. I thought of asking Ian to sing, but I was advised by various people who know him that would be a big mistake. Would that be right, Ian?
I've got one note, Tony. I just sing in one note, and mostly when I sing, people say, pardon, what are you talking about? So, yeah, very, very good advice, whoever gave you that.
You're still with Capital Radio 101.7 FM and Capital Digital here in Perth, Western Australia, or perhaps you're listening somewhere else in this world on your trusty computer. And in fact, I lied to you just then because I'm not sitting in the studios where I normally am, but we're out at the RAF, in the museum actually, the Aviation Museum at RAFA, for the reasons you've heard of before. And I'm talking too with Ian and with Carly, and we're going to talk more about the particular project. So perhaps you first with this. So you had this Damascus moment about caring for veterans, but it must have had a specificity to hone in on what you're doing now. Perhaps you could outline how that happened and how it came about.
Yeah, look, after Drew died, which is now 20 years next February, I was very active in the space thereafter, looking at legislation that supported veterans and war widows. And I spent a number of years in that space and sat on various committees. But as my daughter came to be a little bit older and in primary school, I decided I need to actually walk away a little bit from the veterans space and concentrate on my home life and my daughter and us as a family.
Can I interrupt for just a second? How does somebody who's been widowed in this way adjust? Did what you were, the project, help you adjust yourself, or did you come at it to adjust? Does that make sense, that question?
It does. I think when Drew died, I needed meaning for his death, and I needed to have a purpose. And I didn't want people just to remember Drew as a soldier. He always said to me, I'm not just a soldier, I'm me. And when he died, he became very much a soldier. And I felt that part of him had been lost or left behind. And so I wanted people to not just think of him as the SAS soldier who died in Afghanistan, but more than that, someone who cared about the community. And that was why he joined the military, to give back to the community. And so I wanted to give back in a different way to the community, to the veteran community. So it was really about finding a purpose that was real. So the program came to be in place in South Australia. So RSL Care is a residential care provider, but does have a relationship with the RSL community in South Australia. And they decided that they wanted to give back to that veteran community outside of their traditional practice, which is residential care. And so they began a program that was about supporting veterans who were struggling to find permanent housing and accommodation. And they started with a pilot project, and then that grew to what is today the Andrew Russell Veteran Living Program.
Kylie, the issues are not just covered by saying the needs of the homeless, are they? It's about specifics like mental health and, well, probably so much more.
Yeah, it's a very complex situation in which we have younger and older veterans who are finding themselves in a position where they no longer have that place that is a home. And we're talking about a home, not just a house. A home is very different to accommodation. You could be living in someone else's house, but it's not your home. You could be living in a tent, you could be living in a caravan, in a hostile accommodation, but what we want is a home, and it is a home that gives a veteran purpose to be, I guess, at peace with themselves so that they can resolve relationship issues, drug and alcohol issues, post-traumatic stress disorder issues.
Is it your experience that the veteran in this situation is worse off than the civilian?
Certainly from what we're seeing from the statistics that are now coming through, that would seem to be the case. But there still is a lot that we don't know, because a lot of people will fail to actually acknowledge their veteran status.
Why? Oh, sorry, that's a bald question, but simply, why?
It's an interesting one. I think it really is a cultural question that we face in Australia. If you go to countries like America, they're very pro-veterans and supporting their veterans. You may have been at an airport where they say to the veterans, you can come on the plane first. They looked at bringing that idea into Australia, and a lot of veterans were actually very upset by that. They didn't want to be identified. They didn't want to stand out from the crowd. They didn't ask for that when they served or joined the military. They tend to shy away from that. But also a lot of organisations simply don't ask the question.
In your sad experience, How would Drew have reacted?
I think he would have shied away. He was never one to want to stand out. He liked to be in the background and just to get on with what he needed to do.
But he did say to you that he wanted to be remembered as a member of the community and not just as a soldier.
Absolutely. And even when I think back to when we got married, a few people asked him, you know, will you get married in uniform? And he said no. He said, Kylie's marrying me, not a soldier. And he even spoke to me about that if he was to die in service. He did not want a military funeral. And look, that has different meaning for different people. But for him, he wanted me to remember him not just about the military part of him, but him as a husband, as a father, as a friend, as an uncle, all of those parts of him.
Now, Ian, you're dealing with the RAFIC community and the wider community. Is it your experience that the wider community's expressions and experiences are the same?
I love this questioning, where you're going with the questioning, Tony, because I think it goes to the real crux of what the issue is in WA, and that is there's nothing specifically for veterans. So what's happening, there are fabulous services that we all know for homelessness in Western Australia, and wonderful organisations doing wonderful work in this area. But they've all said to us on our journey that thank goodness somebody is actually doing something for the veterans, because they need to be treated as a specific group because of all the baggage that comes with it that Kylie was talking about.
A very nasty area, but how much is the despair at suicide?
It's ever a presence, I guess, and you know, we see it, and of course we've got the Royal Commission now, and Kylie and I have kept experiencing this, that people, the first thing that people say is how big is the problem and how many have we got in WA. No one can answer that.
No
one's keeping that record, and the other thing is that the veteran community is so close that what we're discovering in our conversations is there's a estimate on the number of veterans on the street, but how do you know? Because they don't identify themselves.
Well, as Kylie was just talking,
said. And secondly, the couch surfing percentage we think is higher because veterans fold in and around one another and really quickly support one another. So, you know, it's clear that no one knows the size of that because veterans are assisting one another. And what we've got to do is have somewhere for them to refer for their friends.
This might be a little bit left of centre, I suppose, but is there any difference in the West Australian syndrome or what's happening here as to the rest of Australia, or are we all the same?
I think...
We don't know.
Probably. No, we don't know, but I think there's probably a consistency, you know, talking to what Kylie's talking about going on in South Australia. We are absolutely going to mirror the program in South Australia because, number one, they're getting over 90% success rate, and I'll talk to you a bit about what that means. But number two, they've been doing, you know, since 2016, and they've experienced all of it, and we don't expect there's going to be a huge difference over here.
Yeah. So, Kylie, after the next break, I want to actually ask you both to talk the specifics of the program and the hopes for the future for it. But in the meantime, are you, Kylie, exhausted by what you've had to do?
Look, when I first spoke to Nathan, the CEO in South Australia, about that I wanted to bring this program to Western Australia, I had in my mind a few very quick conversations, and 3 months later we'd have something in writing and moving forward. And he said, be patient, you need at least 2 years. And I thought, no, of course not. It's already up and running. It's not like I have to prove anything here. You've done all the hard work. Well, it's been almost 2.5 years.
Yes.
So I am feeling exhausted, but I'm also feeling on the cusp of something amazing. And I'm really excited by the future.
So, Ian, if you hadn't come across at that meeting with the then minister, state minister for the Veterans Affairs, Kylie, would this project have happened?
I doubt it, Tony. I think with all of these projects don't get off the ground. You know, 2.5 years. This is almost a no-brainer. Hmm. But we have come across things that you would never have imagined would be barriers, and we've hit them along the journey. And those are the things that hit you from left field. And it's the passion. You've got somebody inspirational like Kylie, who just keeps powering on no matter what. And I guess I've got caught up, and our board and our whole team have got caught up in that passion. And now I think it's just got momentum that is irreversible. It's not going to fail now.
Come back to, original spark of an idea, but it does rely on the community to respond. And that's, I suppose, coming back to my question to you, Eva Hill, sort of, let's forget all this. It probably would have been if you hadn't come across Ian, if he then hadn't introduced you to other community people to work with. It's not a lone job, is it?
Oh, absolutely not. Eventually, I would have just had to have said, I can't do this anymore. I can't continue alone. And, meeting Ian and then him taking it to the board and meeting members of the board and the leadership team at RAFA, it's made me feel very warm inside.
Okay, well, I think I'd like to feel some intellectual warmth now from the music program that I'm supplying to you. So, as I said before, we're not allowing Ian to sing, and we've dealt with that earlier in the program. And Kylie, I realise that you cost a lot of money if I asked you to sing, so I won't be asking you.
I can't sing anyway. I'm not the other Kylie.
Okay, but we will have some music. This is The Listening Post on Capital Radio 101.7 FM and Capital Digital, Perth, Western Australia. And we're talking tonight to two people about an incredible project, which I want to talk about specifically now. But before I even ask Ian and Kylie about it and the nuts and bolts of it, I want to remind them both to talk about the challenges that may have come along the way that can be overcome by people knowing about things. But first, Ian, nuts and bolts, what is the project? What is the program?
So I said earlier about the way that you measure success, and it's exactly what Kylie said. The successful outcome is the veteran being in permanent housing for as long as they want to be, and that could be for the rest of their lives, living a meaningful life and participating in the community and contributing to the community.
And it are those things that, in fact, if we don't dwell on the house side but the home side, brings those other issues into it clearly, do they not?
Yeah, articulated perfectly. It's a, in the homelessness area, I've learned it's called a housing first model. So all of the global literature says that you can't really do anything for anybody who's homeless until they've got a roof over their head, which is what Kylie was saying. Yes. So it has to be a two-part program. It's getting the veteran into some transitional housing, getting a roof over their head quickly, which is transitional emergency housing, getting them in there, connecting them up to all of the professional services that they need to be connected with a view that you transition them out of there into their permanent address. Mm-hmm. So it's a two-part program. It's not just the building of the accommodation, it's actually having an end place for them. It's having the permanent accommodation available as well.
Also, in would I be right in saying, along with that must go a building of trust between, for want of a better word, the provider and the person in need? Because I imagine without that trust, we just go back to perpetuating the same things.
Oh, absolutely, Tony. You don't get to first base.
No.
And you'll lose them. You know, they've done it really tough. And you talked about mental health.
Yes.
Pretty much the experience has been that 100% of the population that come through the Andrew Russell Veteran Living Program have some mental health issues.
So how, and either to answer this, but with the program, this project, how do you get to know who needs and what the priority? Because if I have Joe Bloggs and Fred Nurk, you know, with problems, who do I choose? How do I choose between the two?
So it's very important that we identify our program as being an accommodation program, and we don't provide it's not a provision of professional services. What it is connecting the manager of the program, who has to be a vet themselves, actually just has the role of connecting the veteran to the professional service, the appropriate professional services, the appropriate assessments. So we would be the accommodation supplier and looking after them to the point that they're going out and getting the right services. And Kylie can probably talk some more about that, because we've been building that network in preparation.
Well, Kylie, yes, the network thing, who does the choosing?
Yeah.
How?
So we've had an opportunity to talk to a lot of different healthcare providers, and certainly, as we know, there are a lot of services that are available to the general population as well as to the veteran community. So we've been taking time out to meet with a lot of those providers and explain the program to them, so that when we have a veteran come into our service, and there is a process that we go through when they come into the program of, you know, questions that we ask them to get a gauge of where they're at, we then start referring them. And the first visit that they need to actually undertake is to a GP.
Oh, yes.
So every single person, when something is happening in their life, really should go to their general practitioner. And the general practitioner can undertake that quick assessment and then start to note, well, these are the things that we need to do next. Maybe it's seeing the nurse practitioner. Maybe it's seeing a psychologist. Maybe it's seeing a counsellor. Maybe you need to see a specialist in this area. Maybe we need some drug and alcohol therapy treatment or an inpatient program. But we start off with a general practitioner, and we've actually been speaking to some general practitioners about their willingness to participate in the program and be a starting point, because we know that a lot of these veterans will come in and probably will not have a general practitioner.
No, I'm involved with an organisation that always works with the homeless day in November, for example, where you know the hairstylist and the doctor and so on are all there giving their services. So that's the sort of issue that you're talking about.
Absolutely. So it must start with a GP, and then from the GP we can gain those referrals, and then we can get that veteran into the services that they need. Myself, being a nurse, I've actually taken the opportunity to talk with some of my colleagues who are nurse practitioners who can also offer a valuable service. So they can start with the GP, then have a much longer consult with a nurse practitioner. Then we can refer them to the specific services that they need, whether they be veteran-related services or more general services available to the community.
Question for both of you. I think I might know the answer to this question myself, but are people in the general community willing to help?
Yes.
the support's amazing, and really the building project is already gaining momentum. So we have a block and that's starting. But the support is amazing.
Kylie and Ian with me, Tony Howes, on the Listening Post tonight, coming to trying to bring this all together. To you two, and again, I'll throw this to either can answer to start with. Looking back over the time of the formation of the idea and looking forward to what's to come next. Do you think the challenges have been bigger in the setup, or they're still large and need fulfilling as we go along? Answer it any way you like.
So I guess we have just finalised an offer on a block. And I think for Kylie and I, that's a milestone that it felt like that we would never get to, that we would actually have a location for the transitional housing and that our program would become real.
Are we allowed to ask where that is?
Yeah, sure. It's in Oak Street in Cannington.
Right. So I always think that whenever you're asking for something for the community to respond to, if you've got something they can see and build, your home knows.
Oh, we really are, because now we have an address. Now, you know, we obviously won't be doing mass media on where it is because we won't identify it, but we have a building project, and now we, Kylie and I, actually have something now that we can go out. I mean, the first huge challenge is fundraising, and we're blessed that we're backed by RAFA. I'm blessed to work for a wonderful organization with a board that's just voted unanimously all along the line to support the program. But, you know, we haven't got an endless money supply.
So the money and the fundraising, is that the general public involvement, or do you specify particular groups?
So I guess we've got two lots of fundraising. We've got the CapEx program, which is probably we're going to need to be raising something like $8 million to get the project underway. So that's CapEx. And then there'll be the operational costs, some of which are covered, but we will have to, you know, on a yearly basis, we will have to keep fundraising to improve the program.
Are you optimistic?
Very, very optimistic. But I think there's all the layers of that, Tony, that we all know. You know, you've got the corporate support, you've got philanthropic support, you've got trusts and foundations, and then, you know, every dollar counts. And what we really need is anybody who can give us any help at all. We need your help.
So how do they make contact, and who to whom do they speak? They speak to the RAFA Association.
It's
people?
Probably via me, I think, Ian Craig at RAFA, and probably via either inquiries at rafawa.org.au or our switchboard phone number is 9288 8400 9288 8400.
And if you missed writing those down, just ring us at any stage on 9364988 9364988, and we'll have that information here at the desk for anybody who's interested, and I hope lots of people are. So Kylie, do you become involved in that area as well?
Oh, absolutely. Ian's not going anywhere without me. He's not getting rid of me that easily. This has been a huge amount of work, and as I said, we're on the cusp of now, you know, something really amazing. And I guess I see myself having two roles moving forward. Mm. One is supporting the promotion of the program and gaining that financial support so that the program continue to provide what it is that we're aiming to achieve, which is long-term housing solutions for our veterans. But I also, too, as a registered nurse and a widow, want to give back to the veterans myself. So I also look forward to meeting our veterans and spending time with them and helping them on their own personal journey.
So let's be clear, Tony, she's cracking the whip almost daily.
And I think, knowing you for a long time, Ian, just as well.
Oh, soon. Thank goodness, yeah, because I wouldn't get out of bed otherwise.
No, exactly. So both of you again, just to bring this to some sort of conclusion. Now, I know both of you are optimists, but somebody says to you, right, here's 20 million. What would you see that really at the nth degree happening to that 20 million? Kylie first.
Hang on, can we just repeat the phone number for this person with the 20 million?
Please do. Okay, Kylie.
Yeah, I don't even know where to begin, actually. I guess it's about getting that first building built, that first set of accommodation units for our veterans, and about it being a home as well, so not just bricks and mortar.
Coming back to that original point you made again about the home.
I want it to be a community. I want it to be an environment where our veterans can come and feel safe, and they can re-establish that sense of self and worthiness and belongingness within their own military community, but the wider community as well. Mm. And that means bringing them out of their shell and supporting them through that process and giving them the supports that they need to do that.
Okay, top that. Top that, Ian.
Yeah, thanks, Tony. So, I'll go to the very boring stuff, Mr. 20 million, whoever I'm talking to, because I really want to meet you. Really, it's all of what Kylie said, and I guess we know where we're going with the transitional housing.
Yes.
The permanent housing is another challenge again. So, for instance, in South Australia, they have 39 permanent units that RSL SA actually owns or rents for veterans. So that's the next really big challenge that we're facing. You can assume the building project's going to go on, and, in our dreams, we're going to fund that and it's just going to happen. The next huge challenge is where are they going to live after that? And we've got to address that.
And also, too, in the long term, are there the Kylies and the Ians to pick up the ball when you've decided, retirement is there or whatever? Are there people in our community thinking this way?
Oh, there's no one like Kylie and Ian. absolutely. Look, it doesn't come down to the two of us at all. Yeah. There is already a whole community who has made this happen. I guess we've just had the passion to push it along, but it hasn't just been us at any stage. It's just been a whole network of people who are just prepared to stand up, have courage to actually say, well, this is a cause worth backing, because we just wouldn't have made it. Goodness me, we've just hit too many barriers along the way, which is crazy. But that's, anything worth doing is worth the trouble, really.
And it builds on building on building, does it not? So to finish, give me the title of the program itself so we know what we're talking about in the future.
So, in short, it's called ARVL, so it's the Andrew Russell Veteran Living Program.
And it's contactable through
RAFA. If you contact me, it's just direct your inquiries to Ian Craig, that's me. And, give me a bit of time to answer you, because I'm going to get absolutely overwhelmed by all these people with $20 million, Tony.
Yeah, and indeed, but they won't want to give it to you. They wanted to give it to Kylie.
Well, I don't blame them at all.
Both of you, thanks indeed for allowing us to come to RAFA and to the Aviation Museum. But apart from that, just inspiring us. Thanks indeed.
Tony, this is very important to us, and I think on behalf of both of us and RAFA, we just say thank you so much, because this is what we have to do, is actually get it out there and get people talking about it and feeding back and putting their hands up. So thank you for your help in doing that.